Live programming starts now. Full Service Radio, also proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Hey, listeners, welcome to the Shift Drink Podcast on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Eddie Kim, local bartender at Maidan, Room 11, and various other places around the city. I'm joined by Matthew Ramsey,
chef, author, and illegal mezcal ambassador. And today we also have Mr. Andrew Lindberg.
Hi there.
Every week we share a drink and swap horror stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, and anyone who touches the all-encompassing industry. So Andrew Lindberg here is director of ops for the company that is Rose Luxury, Pineapple and Pearls, and The Little Pearl.
Yes, The Little Pearl.
He's also the closest talker I've ever encountered.
Yep. No, I'll close the distance. By the way, that the intro beat, that's a keeper.
That is a keeper.
Yeah, like it's kind of like trap music style. I liked it. It's good, Jackson.
I think that's our best one yet, for sure.
Winner.
This is like a real, by the way, so this is my first time at the Lion Hotel, and it's like a real, like, industry clubhouse. Like, since we've just been in this little glass room, I've seen like three people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ran into two. Just
yeah,
just
Neil Dundee just walked by again. I was like, oh my God, everybody's here.
Yeah, we just saw Larry Weaver. I mean, everybody's in the house. Morgan's here. All right, so what are we drinking today? What's our shift drink of choice?
Boulevardier. I know typically, you know, stuff with Campari is usually an aperitif, but I like it at all times. It's a little bitter, a little boozy, so basically a Negroni, subbing in bourbon for the gin. Perfectly made by Mr. Kim.
Oh, thank you. I went ahead and pre-batched it, so it just came in a large bottle. But the original recipe is equal parts, 1:1:1 of Campari, sweet vermouth, and rye whiskey or bourbon. Mm-hmm. But I went ahead and doubled the amount of whiskey.
Correct. Yeah. That's my home recipe.
I mean, for modern taste, everyone likes a little bit drier drinks, a little stronger. Yeah. So this one's a little boozier. But in general, if you know, we have a 30-minute show, so we have to get going.
Yeah, cut to the chase.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers, guys.
But what about this drink makes you like it so much, especially at a shift drink?
I'm a sucker for Italian liqueurs, you know, Campari, Amaros, everything. And it's just kind of like, I just like it, I think, because it's kind of like an Italian-American cocktail is what I think of. You know, you have like sweet vermouth, you have the Campari, and then you have like good, strong American whiskey. You know, I start off, I like all the variations. I like it with mezcal. I like it with, you know, Negronis, obviously, is like the classic. And, you know, for my lower ABV cocktail days, for my day drinking days, Americanos is like my go-to, especially all summer. It's like Americanos, you just throw in the club soda. It just tastes great. And Campari is just like so aggressively bitter at times that I like that. You know, I like that. It's not very subtle, and I like that about it.
When I was in Sicily, I was pleased to find that Campari and soda came in one bottle together, already mixed.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome.
It's low ABV cocktails is kind of a worldwide thing.
About that here, yeah.
Here in America, it's actually not.
And I don't know why, because like I really enjoy like we all do, going out and drinking. And
right.
Like, but you know, if I'm drinking like, you know, whiskey on the rocks, there's definitely a time limit on that.
Yeah.
Especially as I get older, like, it's, you know, I'm like, I can't go out for like 8 hours, which I feel, you know, if I'm going out to dinner, then meeting some friends for drinks before and after is like a reasonable kind of, you know, excursion. And unless it's like something a little bit lower, I'm going to probably make it through halfway through dinner and then, you know, make up some lie about how I need to go walk my dog.
Right. That's my line. I don't even have a dog.
Yeah, you're going to get caught in that eventually. It was great. Yeah. They're great to get out. You're like, I got to get a dog.
Well, let's get things started here. Now, this is a game that you are very familiar with. You and I play this at work.
Two truths.
Yeah, two truths, one lie.
So, right before you walked in, I was talking to Eddie, and I was like, you know, the problem is, Matt, is when we played this for so long together, is that you have told me I've developed a tell to where I do something with my eyes or something. And so I'll be like, not even full, like all the way done. And you're like, oh, that's a lie.
Yeah. Do you need to hold up a piece of paper?
Yeah, I think I'm going to put it on my face.
It's in the eyebrows.
All right. So I actually didn't know we were going to be playing this today. So let me just think real quick. And Matt, if I've like repeated any of these that you know about me, are you going to like, just like let Eddie be the guesser?
I'll be cool.
More?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I am going to go with, I got two.
I'm looking at Matthew.
I know. It's like. All right, I'm going to cover it up. I have lost $5,000 in a single hand of poker.
Okay.
I was not born in this country.
Okay.
I am an Eagle Scout.
All right, I know which one's the lie.
I'm also posting the pictures up.
Eddie Kim, this is up to you. Eddie Kim is a poker player, so.
So I am a poker player, and you just nullified me.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying not to give anything away, and I'm just staring.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which one is it?
The losing the amount of money.
Ooh.
I wish that was a lie. Yeah. Unfortunately, that really happened in the city called Atlantic.
Oh man.
Very, very.
You were born in the country.
I was born in America, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like a popular go-to quick lie because you're like, oh, you know.
Yeah, could be.
Military family, maybe. You know,
yeah, you got a strange accent. You
yeah.
know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. But, well, I feel like we definitely know you.
Wait, Eddie, so you're not an Eagle Scout?
No, I am an Eagle Scout. That was the truth.
Oh.
The lie was I was not born in this country because I was born in this country.
What was your Eagle Scout project?
I ran like kind of a community camp for a week. I'll be honest, when you get to like that for me anyway, when I got to like that point of it,
yeah,
it's like the last hurdle. It's quite a thing to get through. And you know, while I was really proud to get through it and get the final thing, you're kind of like over the uniform. So right. For me at that point, I, you know, you're like in high school, you know, so
yeah, it's a
like,
pretty awkward age to be
yeah,
that far
to be walking around like a neckerchief, not ironically. And like, so
full beard and a Boy Scout uniform yeah, looks exactly. kind of creepy.
So I ran basically like a daycare-ish kind of like camp for like kids for like a week. Cause it like was the way I figured I could like qualify the hours, also do something good for the community. In Arlington, Virginia.
Is there a picture for all of our listeners of you in your get-up?
I can get one. I have to go to my parents' house, but they live here, so I can.
Mama Lindbergh.
Yeah. I'm sure if you did some digging on the internet, you could find that. Somewhere.
I recently found my Weeby Loyal book.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I got signed off for computer skills, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Yeah. Well, what did that mean? Like Commodore 64.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
All right. Well, Eddie and I were sitting around the other day, and we were talking about stories of you know, famous people that we have waited on or served.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in the industry forever. You've been in D.C. You're in New York and back in D.C. Any famous people you can recount?
Ooh, yeah. So I've worked in two restaurants where the President Obama came in, which was pretty amazing. Probably for like just overall celebritydom. I was working one night at a steakhouse in New York with my friend, and Jay-Z came in. And this was
cool.
Like 2006, super cool. I don't have any like they were like an asshole kind of celebrity stories. Like honestly, like for years I worked this place in the East Village called the Redhead in New York.
Yeah,
and there, you know, if you've lived in New York, like you know, a lot of celebrities kind of live there and kind of like mingle more amongst us common folk on the daily. So like, you know, it'd be cool, but like. Julia Stiles came in like once a week, you know, something like that. And it was like,
you chose the right woman.
What? Yeah.
Team crush.
Sorry. I guess a couple people like that. I think Sam Rockwell
okay. Sam Rockwell. I used to work at a little place in the West Village. And he worked at the video store right next door.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Did you learn anything from the Obama visits? Any eating habits?
Just, you know, if I, you know, wasn't already enough impressed with, you know, him and his wife, even more so. Just like such a cool guy. And I think I'm stealing this line from somebody else that night. But it's like he knows how big of a deal he is. And he also knows how nervous you are. And he totally like negotiates that space perfectly. You know, he comes in when he shakes your hand, he like puts his kind of like hand on your shoulder. And he's like, it kind of gives you that look and that little nod, like, it's okay. It's all right. You know, and you're like, oh my God, oh my God. He's just like, all right, cool. So what are we eating? You know, like, you know, he's a really, really cool dude. So, I can't believe I just described him as a cool dude. By the way.
Well, he seems like a cool dude. So the hotel itself actually just recently played host to Michelle and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Like when you served him or when he visited your restaurants, what went through your head? Like, what did you feel that I guess these guys felt?
Besides just, you know, it's a little nerve-wracking because of the security measures. And but overall, you know, you just want to make sure, like, obviously if they're coming to see you, they're coming to see you. And without them ever saying this, you know, I assume that it's, and we all assume that it's because they want to maybe have this experience, and they don't want to experience it necessarily as the president and the first lady, but they probably want to experience it more like the rest of us do.
Sure.
So it's being able to deliver that kind of hospitality with the giant elephant in the room is that, you know, he's the leader of the free world. And, you know, there's a lot that comes with that. like, you know, it's hard to, you know, give somebody a typical, you know, entrance when they enter through a different door. You know, it's like, you know, we're used to greeting people most of the times through some form of a host or a front desk. And when they come in through the back door and alleys and there's snipers on the roof, it's a little bit different, you know? So yeah. It's, and when they get in there, it's just, it's also just like trying to make sure that they have, I guess, normal, like a normal experience, and are experiencing what, you know, your particular restaurant is.
And the whole time you're thinking, be normal, be normal.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, don't just be cool, man. Just be cool. You're like, you know, like, you're sweating, and like, you're like, you know, the back of your hands are sweating. You're so nervous, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, it was a great experience, and, you know, true gentleman.
Right on. Eddie, do you have any famous people stories?
I think we've all served a couple of famous people. Working in D.C. is a little different from working in, let's say,
our version of different, like, yeah, celebrity here,
yeah,
is a,
yeah,
little.
Yeah. And they don't necessarily jump out and yeah, dine at all the regular places that a normal celebrity might. Normal celebrity. But in college, I did hospitality as part of our program board. And I remember, okay, I did hospitality for folks like Jon Stewart and Dave Chappelle.
Oh, that's cool.
That's awesome.
I think one of my most intimate experiences with a celebrity was Dave Chappelle before the Chappelle Show even aired. And him,
you
just
knew him before he was Chappelle, man. That's,
yeah,
cool, right?
Way
but
back.
He was still smoked a lot of weed.
Yeah.
So after his show, he just we all typically go to a pizza place. We were underage, so we didn't have a shift drink, but we would have shift pizza.
Yeah,
shift pizza.
He joined us with his manager slash bodyguard, because back then he could only afford one guy to be both. And then he was just way out of his mind, smoked a lot of weed, and we all had a rousing round of singing the diarrhea song.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Know. Oh, man. He can just whip out.
What's the diarrhea song?
I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. No?
I got a face radio.
I don't think I can. It's like, it's, you know, when you slide into third.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. The baseball thing. Yeah.
Okay.
I did go out. I went out drinking with Kiefer Sutherland once. I left.
What?
Yeah. He was in town filming one of a movie like 24. Beat. Or not, what was the movie like 24, but with Michael Douglas? The Sentinel. I think it's called The Sentinel.
Oh, yeah.
So he was like a Secret Service dude. And like, anyway, and he came in somewhere I was working, and we went out drinking. That got really, really fun.
I bet he's a fun guy to hang out.
Yeah, he's really fun and super down to earth. And, you know, everyone's just screaming Jack Bauer at him like all the time.
Yeah. Where is it?
Yeah, we went to Old Ebbett, which is like truly fitting. If you're like an industry
person. You're in the city. Okay.
Yeah, you have to.
That's cool. Did you know that a lot of those animals in the Old Ebbett are animals that Roosevelt shot?
Really?
Yeah.
Himself.
You guys should explain
Teddy.
Old Ebbett as for out-of-towners, because that place is really wild.
That's a good point. Old Ebbett is literally the oldest bar in D.C. It's right across from the White House over there.
That's not true, is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Raven was like the longest-serving bar. Is that?
I don't know.
We'll Google these things.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But that's what I've been told. But also, yeah, they have a bunch of taxidermy from the Roosevelt area.
It's one of the highest grossing independently owned restaurants.
I know that, yeah.
In,
it's like them and like
America.
Tau Vegas.
Yeah,
like
Clyde's
it.
Group.
It's basically like right across from the White House, or like super close.
Yeah. And it's kind of a spot where a lot of politicians and a lot of people in that industry hang out and get drinks afterwards.
And they have something called the Orca Platter.
Yeah,
so after 11 o'clock, it becomes half price.
Which is kind of an industry standard.
Which is a huge industry thing.
Yeah.
So
a giant shellfish platter to be enjoyed at 1 a.m. We've done that like with the groups at every restaurant I work with like multiple times. It's like, if you don't know what to do, it's just like, let's go to Ebbett, get an Orca platter. It's like, okay.
When I moved back to D.C., that was the first thing I did was go to Old Ebbett and grab a late night Orca. When I was in college, I used to work at Sequoia over on the waterfront as a maitre d'.
Georgetown Waterfront.
Yeah, and this is in college. And Kenny G.
You were a maitre d' in college?
I was.
That's impressive.
I was head of our VIP guests.
Oh.
So when Kenny G rolled up in there for the 4th of July celebrations, Kenny G has a surprisingly high voice. He walked right up to my stand and goes, "Yo, man, where the bitch is at?" Like, verbatim.
He didn't say that.
He did not say that.
100%. Kenny G said, "Where are the bitches at?" And wow. I escorted him outside the patio.
Sorry.
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
Jack is killing it in there.
Yeah.
Like, the facts on the bomb. So good.
That's my one. I've waited on a couple people. But.
Well, where, you know, with all the, you know, we talk all the time about how like great like the dining scene has become in D.C. Not that it wasn't always good, but how much better it's kind of become. But, you know, we haven't really, like the late night dining scene is like the one thing that's just kind of like, it's like Old Ebbett and New Big Wong.
Oya Mills in there. Passenger used to be there, but they
used to be
shorten their hours.
I cross the bridge and go to Bob and Edith's. That's like my
go-to. Ah, okay.
Because right from Capitol Hill, it's like 10 minutes.
Yeah,
in an Uber, it's like nothing. But like if you think about it, like where else do you go?
There aren't many places. But then when I started working at Maidan, I was actually introduced to a new group of industry folks that I hadn't worked with, and they have their own set of late night places, and cool. It's actually eye opening.
Yeah,
any steakhouse.
What?
Really?
Over on 17th Street. Apparently they're open all hours of the night.
That's cool. Annie's?
Annie's.
Yeah, okay. On 17th Street.
So I've yet to go there. They don't go to New Big Wong. They go to like Jackie's. So there's affiliations with which Chinese food place you're going to go to.
Okay. All right. That's cool. Yeah, the whole... It's always interesting, the late night culture and... For industry people after in different cities, because it's always different. There's always different drinks. There's always different places to go.
It's a little bit more difficult here in the city, too, ever since Metro got rid of the late night service on weekends. So now everything is kind of over.
Yeah, but Uber also like opened up so many.
That's true.
So many doors.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'll just Uber something. Like I'll Uber eat something on my way home instead of.
That's when you get into like pro moves.
What was the last thing you Uber eats?
The last thing I Uber ate was pizza. It wasn't very good.
I knew Big Wong via Postmates once every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think the last time we were talking, I was talking about heating up
fried
pork chops. And I do that. That's like my go-to move. It's like it's fantastic.
Hey, Matt, have you ever done Uber Eats on the way home and the food has beat you home?
Yes, it has. Yeah. Actually,
really,
I Uber ate one time while I was for 2 days. I was an Uber Eats delivery driver, and I was on my way home from delivering somebody else's Uber Eats, and I Uber. Ordered.
No way.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
I don't know if that's awesome, but it was something. Well, listen, ADL, you just opened up a restaurant. We're gonna talk about that, but we're gonna jump out for a quick break and then we'll be right back. This is Shift Drink.
And the break song today by a producer named Kido, K-I-E-D-O. Find him on SoundCloud. Actually based out of Brooklyn. This is called Hit 'Em Up. Be right back on Shift Drink.
Welcome back to the Shift Drink Podcast, broadcasting live right here in the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan. I'm joined here with Matthew Ramsey, my co-host.
Heyo.
And Andrew Lindberg,
hi.
Director of Operations for the Roses Luxury Restaurant Group. So let's start off. You literally, what was it, like a week ago, you just opened up a new property.
Yeah. We opened up Little Pearl on Capitol Hill on the Carriage House of the Hill Center on 9th and Pennsylvania, Southeast D.C., and we did it in kind of two phases. The first part we opened mid-December, which is kind of the AM cafe operation. And then about January 2nd, we opened the nighttime. And it's kind of like coffee by day, wine by night, is what we say in a nutshell.
Actually, going back to one of our previous episodes, sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
You call that one of Little Pearl's
sandwiches. Yeah, I just had it the other day again, the spicy chicken fried sandwich.
Yeah, Matt Ramsey's a regular, real company man.
So, I can't control myself around it.
You do love that sandwich.
I consume it in about two bites, and I sweat, and I'm just the endorphins.
It's gross to watch.
Yeah, it's great. It's a real treat.
But I actually wanted to ask you about the wine program at night. So that the wine program is actually run by Kirsten McHale Brown.
Yep, Michael Brown. Kirsten Michael.
Michael Brown, who is a veteran of Rose's Luxury.
Yeah.
But what is the philosophy of the wine program at Little Pearl?
So, you know, we were really excited to work with Kirsten again, who, for all intents and purposes, opened Rose's Luxury as a server. And then she took about a 2-year hiatus from our group, and she was working as the beverage director of Kinship in Metier and did that opening. We were really excited, and we kind of always wanted to work with her again. So when we were thinking about doing a wine bar, she was our first really and only choice. You know, and it's really interesting because Kirsten and I have always collaborated really well, and this is definitely, you know, her wine program, and, you know, I'm just there to kind of help it and, you know, flush out, and we kind of have somebody at every restaurant like that.
Yeah.
But for Kirsten, you know, when we talked about it, it was really interesting because unbeknownst to any of us, basically there was like three or four wine bars that kind of all opened very close to each other in the city. Like Primrose, Maxwell, Dabney just opened their cellar a little bit before us, and now us. And, you know, the direction we want to take it is we have very similar philosophies on wines where, like, we both, you know, really like natural wine, really like the natural wine movement. But Kirsten, you know, also, like myself, really likes the classics. And, you know, classics are a classic for a reason.
She is very, very stubborn-headed about some of her opinions on wines.
Yeah, so in a good way. With industry colleagues, absolutely. With guests, she's a little more bending. Yeah. But yeah, and so, you know, when we were talking earlier, and I was, you know, just like, what do you see here? And, you know, for her, it was really important to make sure that we had our bases covered. And, you know, usually I don't recommend doing, like, a lot of things. I like to kind of focus stuff and do less things really, really well. But in this case, because it's wine, it's a little bit easier because you don't have to actually, we're not actually making the wine. You know, we wanted to make sure that we had like a huge range. And for me, it was important to have two non-alcoholic wines available for her.
The Georg Geiger.
The Georg Geiger stuff. Yeah, and a couple other ones that are coming in, some Eric Bordelais stuff, which I'm really excited about. And for her, it was really important to not only have kind of like this, you know, homage to, you know, like natural winemaking, which is really exciting what's going on in places like, you know, California, even Virginia and France, especially in Spain, but also to have these really, you know, cool classic wines. So like, I think a perfect example of that is like, you know, we have a 2005 like Müller Thurgau from Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And Kirsten and I actually tried that one together. And immediately we were both just like, oh, this is like exactly what we like. We're both like super into older wines. We both kind of, that was something we bonded about quickly, is that especially white wine, I think we drink way too young across the board.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have wines with a little bit more character, a little bit more age, and a little bit more range than, unfortunately, because we both agreed that we were like, when we go out, until very recently, when we go out to get a glass of wine, I'm most excited to see the wine programs at other restaurants.
Sure.
You know, that's, so like, for me, I'm like, I go right here, I go to Tailed Goat because I think Bill runs probably the best wine program in
really
the city.
Fantastic.
And like,
yeah,
every time I go in there as an industry professional, I'm always like, you know, like trying something new, and it's like, and it's exciting. And for us, we were like, okay, well, it's funny, like, because why isn't that more evident at a lot of wine bars we've been to in the past? And for me, having worked at the time I did where I did in New York, like, you know, always having, you know, the original terroir on 12th Street, mm-hmm, you know, I was like, man, it was so cool the way they approached it. And it was just like, across the board, all these options, and it was really neat. And so we kind of took it from there, and we just wanted to have like really, really cool stuff. And then she just, you know, drove away with it.
You mentioned natural wines coming out of Virginia. What's the state of Virginia wine these days?
You know, getting better and better. I mean, it's, you know, the soil's fantastic, in my opinion, albeit, you know, uncredited opinion. But you know, the biggest, I think, obstacle that we're all aware of is that the weather in Virginia is very different than a lot of very successful wine growing areas.
Right.
And rain can be a real big deal. So the humidity can be a really big deal. But, you know, they're learning to work around it. And, you know, when you have places like Rosemont and you have like the stuff Sebastian's doing at Lighthouse.
Yeah.
You know, just, I mean, come on. It's excellent.
And when you say Sebastian, just for our listeners.
Sorry. Sebastian Zouton, who is the owner operator of Primrose, located in the Brookland neighborhood of Washington, D.C., in Northeast Washington, near Catholic University.
Very good at this.
Thank you.
Well,
I mean, he's fantastic, and he's like a staple in this industry and does just a fantastic job.
And he's focusing mostly on very French Parisian style wine bar.
I believe so.
Natural wines. And you, when you put your flag down on what your wine bar is going to be, you're going for a little bit more wider range.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's I think by their own description, they are like a Parisian style natural wine bar. I'd say that probably 25% of our list is made up of natural wines. The rest, certainly the most of them have organic and biodynamic practices going on, but that's just kind of the way the industry's going, but not necessarily all the time. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, everyone, I'm not saying anything new here, but, you know, like the natural wine movement is incredible. It's great for the wine industry. People are getting excited about wine in a way they haven't in a really long time.
Yeah.
And these are wines that are delicious and meant to be drunk very young. You know, it's a little early, I think, to see how well they sell her, but, like, you know, there's also something to be said for, you know, really old, like white Burgundy, which is, you know, and there's something to be said for really old, you know, for me, like Bordeaux and stuff like that. And, you know, some of the great, great wines of all time probably use a lot of sulfur, whether they're admitting to it or not. And, like, and sometimes for me personally, that's okay.
Okay. And we're calling it a movement and not necessarily a fad or just a trend.
I don't think it's a fad. I don't think it's a trend. I think the people that are passionately doing this are going to be doing this for certainly the rest of their lives and probably generations after that with their wineries. I mean, this is a big thing. And I mean, I think it's like saying that organic food is going to go away. It's just not. We're not going to go back to like
what
processed stuff.
What a time to be alive.
Do
you want to name some of your favorite producers?
For natural stuff, I've you know, one of the early ones that I've never been able to really get away from is Domaine Lucci, which is out of Adelaide in South Australia. I think their stuff is incredible. Right now on our list, we have a winery from Mendocino called Idlewild, which prior to Kirsten introducing me to it, I was unaware of very, very happily. A lot of people, it's been around for a little while, and I think actually I'm like basically working for Sebastian. I think I saw it on the Primrose Instagram, but they got in some Brutal Wine Company, which is an Austrian dude, which is like supposed to be killer stuff. That I tried, I think.
I had that bottle.
Oh, is it good?
Yeah, it's fucking delicious. Okay. Holy cow. Still, yeah.
It's very hard to find. Very hard to get your hands
Interesting.
On.
I believe the story was, they every year they have a special release.
Yeah.
And they get specific grapes from a different vineyard. They make the wine.
Yeah, he's Austrian, I think, the winemaker, right? But he gets like a lot of his stuff from Spain maybe?
Spain,
yeah.
Yes.
Huh. But yeah, I tried it once, and it was pretty epic.
Now, you just opened a restaurant. You're in the post-coitus glow.
That's what we call it.
Yeah, right? What have you learned from opening up Little Pearl? Obviously, it's not your first restaurant, but...
No. What have I learned? It's all about the team. You know, it's, you know, hire the best possible people that you can. And I think that's something that's very easy to talk about doing, but a little bit more rigorous to actually do. And if you are going to want to hire the best people, you know, you have to try to have, like, the best, you know, offer or product. So... You know, the success of everything we've seen so far is from, you know, about, you know, the 20 to 30 people that work at Little Pearl equally, you know, from the dishwashers to the servers. You know, the daytime crew, you know, like opened the doors to a line that was basically around the block and, you know, and just did a 7-hour service without a bead of sweat on their first day, which I'm still in awe of, and did it all with, you know, huge smiles on their face. You know, everyone in our group really likes to take care of people, and it's you know, we talk about it a lot, but it's what all our success is
for,
is the team. Like, and I think, you know, Matt, you can agree to that, is that, you know, we as a group, like, we all really like each other, we all really get along, and, you know, we operate in a way where, you know, if that's kind of like our core, like, that's where, you know, success is, you know, gonna happen.
Yeah, it's a family for sure.
And it's nothing really new, but I mean, Roses, you're well known, at least in the city, for really taking care of your employees.
Yeah, we try. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there anything you would change or adapt for your next opening? You're only as good as your last opening.
Yeah, what would I do? I don't think so. You know, I think, I believe that you prepare. You know, I've done quite a few openings at this point. And you prepare the best you can. But at some point, you just kind of, you're going to have to jump in a little bit. You're going to have some things that you can't figure out sitting around the conference table. You can't figure out, you know, you just have to do it. And you have to be like, okay, well, you know what? On the paper, it made a lot of sense for us to put, like, shelving right here for the server station. But then, you know, when we're in the space, it doesn't make any sense because this can't happen. And it made a lot of sense for us, you know, when we're sitting around to say, yeah, we can, you know, be open from then to then. But then, you know, when we're in there and, you know, our team is like, hey, this actually is like a really long service. It's a little bit difficult and we're having trouble getting like family meal out in time. Like, okay, well, let's reevaluate that, you know?
Okay.
So I don't know how much I change. I think, you know, we plan pretty extensively before we get in, before we get into it. I don't, you know, we certainly, you know, have lots to learn from project to project.
Sure.
I think we put our best foot forward every time.
But every experience is new. So.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Are you, I won't ask, but you're already working on the next project, I assume?
Not right now.
Question.
I will say, we haven't. I'll put it this way: we have a couple ideas, but for the next couple months, our hands are full with the infancy of Little Pearl, and also, you know, Roses Luxury and Pineapple and Pearls continuing to get, you know, better and push it every day.
All right. Well, we're nearing the end here.
Oh no!
But we're not going to leave without doing a rapid fire, ADL.
Oh, okay. It's like word association, right?
Almost. Right. Yeah. Also, before we go out, we should also mention that ADL actually created the name Shift Drink for us.
He
is the forefather.
We were shooting the breeze before service one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so thank you for that.
You're very welcome. We won't mention all the other terrible ones. Yeah. I threw a lot of darts that day.
We had a lot of terrible names.
All right. Yeah. What was Mumbo Sauce was one. That was good.
Mumbo
was
Sauce is pretty good.
Mumbo Sauce. Wedge
Salad.
One of DC's of like native official.
Yeah,
gelatinous sauces that we put
on
our wings.
Written articles about the Mumbo Sauce.
I feel like it's getting some like national press at this point. Like people come here and they're like, "Oh, hey, like
it's there."
Yeah, it's around.
It's there. All right, you ready? Are you?
I don't think so. But
are you buckled in? Hold on to your butts.
Here we go.
Okay. First question: what was your first AIM screen name?
Sorry. I like this one a lot.
All right, this is true.
AOL instant messenger.
Yeah, I know what it is, Ramsey. Yeah,
well, there's some millennials out there.
Okay, yeah. So there used to be these chat rooms. So it's difficult to pronounce, but can I just say it was if you took the phrase "the world is yours," which appeared on the blimp in Scarface, which especially too, if you were like a hip hop kid in the
this
90s,
is an Easter egg,
and
huh?
Then you condensed it to like it starts with a W and ends with a Z. I can't remember exactly what like all the letters were, but it basically was like it kind of phonetically was "the world is yours" from Scarface.
Oh, wow. That's
here it is. This is why. 94. Nas is Illmatic. And can I just add something real quick? I know we're out of time, but like I continuously thank the entire team at Roses Luxury for my birthday a couple years ago. They got me tickets to what we're listening to in the background right now for the 20th anniversary of Illmatic show at Lincoln
awesome.
Theater. They got it for me as a gift, and I went, and it was everybody was like in their late 30s and early 40s, like just going nuts, like jumping up and down on chairs, like rapping every lyric along with that album.
That's awesome. Eddie Kim.
So, do you sing in the shower?
That's
not the question.
I do.
You do. What do you sing?
I write songs that are originals, usually about my dog, and I usually perform them very audibly for my wife, who will be like my audience in another room. I belt it out, but yeah, I don't do like it's all original material.
And what's your dog's name?
My dog's name is Indiana Jones, and we call him Indy for short.
Oh, love songs, the indie.
Yeah, but it's more like I write them like more like, you know, like, you know, trap music, that kind of style.
Yo,
I try
man,
to,
now
I try to
dog.
Stay. Yeah, exactly. We named the dog Indiana.
Fast food guilty pleasure.
I'll say McDonald's french fries. I think they're like just the or hash browns. Any potato product from McDonald's.
Yeah. McGriddle.
Never been a fan. I'll go like sausage McMuffin with egg and two hash browns is the standard breakfast order.
Your favorite Kurt Russell movie?
I have to pick one. You know he's a winemaker?
Is he really?
Really?
Yeah, he is.
Let's talk about his wines, actually.
Makes wine with a winery called Ampelos in Santa Barbara, where I used to live there, worked at a winery. But he's like a pretty serious winemaker, yeah.
Is it good?
It's fantastic. I've tried all his wines, and he kind of names them after like his wife, Goldie Hawn, his daughter... what's her name?
Kate Hudson. Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
Is it called the Goldie
Russell
Hour?
Big Trouble in Little China. Final answer.
Yeah.
Good Tango
answer.
And Cash would have all. Yeah.
Good answer.
But yeah, you have to.
Okay. If you could assemble a dream team or super band of DC industry people, not from your restaurant group already.
Ooh.
Who would it be? Let's say four people.
Front of the house, back of the house, across the board.
Full spectrum.
Oh my God. I would, you know, I'd love to work with Jill Tyler again, owner and operator of Tail Up Goat. We worked together a little bit at Roses while she was in the process of opening, and I had a lot of fun working with her.
Okay.
This is like a good like ahead of time question.
Yeah. No, that's the whole point.
Yeah. My buddy, you know who I want to work with again? My buddy, I would love to hang out more with Adam Greenberg, who we worked together for like 6 months in New York City, and then we kind of like lost touch a little bit, and now he's opening up a new place over by Union Market.
Coconut Club.
He might be around the line right now. He's usually,
yeah, is he hanging around right now?
Yeah.
Oh, is this being broadcast in this fucking hotel? Pardon my language.
Yes and no.
Yes. Okay, cool. Well, Adam, if you're out there, love to work with you again, man. and I will say,
just your front of house.
Yeah, I think I'd have a lot of fun working with Sebastian. So
I feel like you had to throw Sebastian in.
I have to. Like I've loved everything he's done for so long. He's a hilarious dude. I'd love to be able to work with him in some capacity.
Okay,
so those would be my top three.
Top three. All right, we'll take it. Okay. And
favorite DC hidden gem.
For like food.
Food or whatever.
Because you mentioned before, you're just married. You paid for your entire wedding. You only go out once a month to do
favorite
that.
Favorite most of it, yeah. Our parents favorite most of it. I'll tell you, our favorite place to go eat is, it's actually in Annandale, but we go to A&J. Like, it's it. It's awesome. It's my favorite restaurant. Yes. A&J, Annandale specific.
Church.
It's my church. I call it church because I go on Sundays and I eat there. But it's fantastic, cash only, so make sure to stop at the ATM right on Markham Road.
Markham Road. Off Little Session style noodles, right?
They describe it as northern dim sum, but most of the dishes look Taiwanese, kind of, or... They do a lot. Yeah.
But it's all very, very good.
It's all fantastic, and I dare anybody to fully complete there and spend more than $40 for two people total. I mean, it's such a value. It's fantastic. Most expensive menu items, like $6.
I agree.
No alcohol, but...
Deathbed meal. This will be our final question.
Oh, man. I feel like I answered this before, but I can't remember. Oh, you know what?
Speak from the heart.
Yeah, I'm just going to speak from my heart. It'd be one of two things that I think my mom would have made, but she... it would probably be like lasagna, which was always like my favorite thing as a kid. And I don't get to have it as much anymore, but still, like, whenever my sister was in North Carolina now, whenever we're both in town, that's what my mom makes. And so it like triggers a lot of like really warm memories for me.
Right on.
Okay. One more question.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I'm sure your mom's listening. So.
Yeah. Hi, mom. I love your lasagna.
Almost forget, we always do a Mary Fuck Hill.
Yeah.
So Mary Fuck Hill. Wine edition. Which trend or fad would you marry, fuck, kill? Biodynamic wines, grower champagnes, pet gnats.
Ooh. I'm going to say I will... Oh, it's so hard. I think I marry biodynamic wines. I'm actually going to fuck pet gnats, and I'm going to kill grower champagne. I'm making that decision partially financially.
Yeah.
I think that... that's gonna be my answer. Sorry, I'm waving at somebody else. This place is crazy.
Yeah.
Can I just ask
Gina Cersavani, yeah, bartender,
Gina Cersavani
and
with her
two kids,
with her two beautiful daughters, Gina, who I've known for such a long time. Oh my god.
No, they're adorable.
Can I just ask you real quick before we get cut off here?
Yeah.
What would be your guys' deathbed? What your meal was? Oh. I remember Eddie. We talked about it once, but I don't remember what yours.
Easy, very
oh,
easy.
Good. Yeah.
White Castle cheeseburgers with seared foie gras and a side of pickled okra.
So you bring in your own foie gras and then put it
on the... So here's the beauty behind White Castle, and I could talk for hours about this, but the patty is literally steamed, even at the, you know, on the griddle, it's steamed over onions. So when you buy them frozen at the grocery store and you microwave them, they're actually cooking in basically the same process. So it's almost exactly like your White Castle experience. So, you buy your White Castle at home, you sear foie on the side, and then you top it off with some pickled okra.
Nice.
Wow.
Eddie.
And they'll get all, I mean, if you're in a jail, they'll get all of it.
Yeah.
Do it all.
Yeah.
I feel like that's pretty easy. I'm not like asking, I mean, the foie maybe, but.
Mine's a single bowl. It's Korean blood sausage stew.
Right. Yeah.
So not just the blood sausage, but you throw into a stew a lot of hearty green vegetables. They throw in like sesame seeds. It's like a beef.
Can I get that broth anywhere around here? Like,
yeah, yeah. If you go out to Annandale, there's a place called Seoul Sundae.
Okay.
Sundae, Soondae.
Mm-hmm.
That's blood sausage, and you can get the blood sausage just kind of. It's interesting because it's served at like body temperature.
Okay.
So not a lot of food is served at body temperature.
So I like my blood.
Yep.
But this dish is perfect that way.
Okay.
But they'll go ahead and throw it into one of those clay pots.
Yeah.
They'll burn you if you touch it. Most delicious thing I've ever had in my life.
Sunday. Cool.
All right.
Reminds me of my dad. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Great answer.
I'm officially hungry. So let's get out of here.
All right.
ADL, thank you for joining us.
Hey, man, thank you guys. Super, super professional.
This has been awesome. I'm Matthew Ramsey.
I'm Eddie Kim.
And we're Shift Drink, recording live.
I was ADL, I don't know.
Yeah. ADL 5000.
Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion. Catch you next Monday.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.